Turn with me to Exodus chapter 3, and we're going to be there looking at the life of a really cool guy that you all probably know. Exodus chapter 3. If you have a Bible like mine, it's page 49. If you don't, good luck. Exodus chapter 3. So while you're finishing turning there, let me give you some backstory. Okay, so Exodus chapter 3 is about Moses. You all probably have heard of this guy, but let me refresh your memory, okay? So Israelites, they're God's chosen people, kind of the main characters of the Old Testament. They're, you know, off doing their own thing. And then Joseph, he becomes part of Pharaoh's court, and he is second in command to the Pharaoh, and he's important, and he's an Israelite. And he brings in Jacob and his whole family, his dad and his whole family. He brings them in when there's a time of famine in the land, and the Israelites wind up in Egypt, okay? And so the Israelites are now located in Egypt, and they're there for quite a while. They're living in, you know, good times because Joseph is second in command, so he treats them well. But then as time goes on, the Pharaoh dies off, and a lot of the officials die off, and the new Pharaoh starts to realize, man, there's a lot of Israelites around here, and he feels threatened by that. And so what he begins to do is kind of almost a Hitler Nazi-like extermination of them. He demands that all the firstborn boys are murdered, are killed as they're born, and he just doesn't want any chance that these Israelites overtake the Egyptians. And so he kind of puts his foot down, makes a really serious decree. Well, you may know the story, you probably do. Moses is born to this woman there in Egypt. And his mom loves him, obviously, like you would your child. She loves him and wants the best for him and doesn't want him to be killed. And so when he's born, she hides him for, I believe the Bible says, 3 months. And then she puts him in a basket and floats him down the river, trusting God is going to take care of him. And you know how the story goes? Amazingly, the Pharaoh's daughter is down by the river and sees Moses in the basket. Well, actually just sees the basket first. And they go and down and find Moses in the basket. And there, it's a really cool story. You should go back and read it. But you know, Moses, because of that, gets to grow up in the Pharaoh's house, and he gets to be more or less a prince in Egypt. And so it's a really neat situation for Moses that God is calling up one of his own through the ranks of the Pharaoh. And so Moses is there in Egypt under the house of Pharaoh. And as he grows older, he begins to notice, and once the tide kind of turns for the Israelites, that the Israelites are being treated pretty badly, pretty poorly. One day he sees that there's some Israelite being beat up by an Egyptian slave driver. And Moses is enraged, and he goes and he kills this slave driver. And then he, at that point, he realizes, I got to get out of town. People are looking for me. He hears that everybody has found out what's going on. And so he gets out of town. He flees to a place called Midian. It's out in the desert. And he ends up finding a wife there and settles down, kind of stays out in Midian for a while. And all this crazy backstory leads up to where we're at today in Exodus chapter 3, where God is going to call Moses in the most unique way, in a story that you're probably familiar with. And before we read it, I want to encourage you with the fact that haven't you ever been driving in a car and listening to a song on the radio, and you've heard this song a million times? Maybe it's even one of those songs where you're like, when it comes on, you just reach to change the channel or turn it down or something. But this one particular time, for whatever reason, you listen to the song, and then all of a sudden the words of that song really speak to you, or really you just think, wow, that's a good song, or man, I really need to hear that today. I mean, am I the only one that's happened to, or you guys agree with me there? Yeah, this for me was Exodus chapter 3 over the weekend as I started looking at it, and man, God just revealed some new things to me, and I hope that's my prayer for you this morning, that it will do the same for you, that God's word will come alive to you in a new way that you hadn't seen before. So Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 1. If you're there, say, I'm there. All right. We're going to read a lot, okay? 20 whole verses. So I know it's a lot, but stick with me. Here we go. It says, now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert. And he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. And so Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? Interesting, right? I mean, his reaction just cracks me up there. Verse 4, I mean, I'll go over there and see how it just is not burning. That's interesting. He says, when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called him from within the bush, Moses. Moses, I can just picture Moses turns around like, is he talking to me? He's looking at the sheep back there. Is he talking? And God says again, Moses. Yep, he's talking to me. Okay. There's no denying that God's calling Moses by name, right? God's called you by name before too. It's up to you to listen. He says, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Verse 5, do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. And then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because they're slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. And so I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Whew. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. And probably like many of you would reply, Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. And Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation. So go assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt, and I have promised to bring you up out of misery in Egypt into the land of those people, a land flowing with milk and honey. Verse 18, the elders of Israel will listen to you, and then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the desert to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not go, let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. And after that, he will let you go. So God is calling Moses to a big task here, right? A big, big task. Moses has probably pretty well decided he doesn't really want anything to do with the whole situation between Israel and Egypt anyway. He fled from the land. He's been living in Midian. He found himself a cute wife, got a couple kids, and things are good for Moses. He doesn't really want any more trouble, right? But now God's calling him to this big thing, to go back and lead his people out of slavery. God has called you to something as well. He's called you to something big, and it may not seem big to you, but God has called you. And here's the thing. Here's what we're going to look at this morning. When God calls us, from what I learned from Moses here, there's three obstacles that stand in our way. Three things that get in our way when God calls us to do something. And the first one is this, our capabilities. Did you notice when God called Moses, what Moses said to God, how he responded? Look at verse 11. It says, but Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Because you see, Moses is focused on his own capability right there. He's thinking, God, who am I? I'm just this little old... I mean, he's probably literally thinking, I'm just a little shepherd guy out here in the middle of nowhere, minding my own business, and you got to come along with this burning bush. Who am I to go talk to the Pharaoh and tell him to let his whole workforce go? Who am I? And Moses is doubting that he's even capable. In fact, later in chapter 4, verse 10, Moses says, oh Lord, I have never been eloquent of speech. And he calls himself slow-tongued. He's like, Lord, I don't even speak good, and you want me to go talk to the Pharaoh? I mean, he's kind of like us, right? That we doubt our capabilities. When God calls us to do something, we doubt ourselves and thinking that we're even capable to do what God's called us to do. The thing is, I mean, God's capable, number one, but the thing is, generally, when God's called you to do something, he's going to give you the capability to do it, right? The way that I've always seen Moses in this story is kind of just this, for lack of better words, little old slow guy. You know, he's just like a little slow. Like Moses is just that guy. He's like, Lord, I don't even speak good. You want me to go to the Pharaoh? And that's just kind of how I always have seen Moses. Like he's just this weak guy, and God's going to call up this weak guy to go and lead his people out of Israel. And Moses sees himself that way, obviously, apparently so anyway, because he's focused on his capability rather than on God's capability. But you know what? I started thinking back to all the story I had just read before this chapter. Moses was actually educated in Pharaoh's home. He was probably a pretty well-educated guy. He probably had the most choice foods. He was brought up in a good household. That he was, if there was anybody in the land, he was the one that would have the know-how to go and speak to the Pharaoh to let God's people go, right? Not only that, he was practiced up on rescuing people. In chapter 2, the way he finds his wife, because Moses is kind of a hopeless romantic like that, he sees these shepherds picking on these girls, and he goes in, swoops in, saves the day, and lets them water their flocks and runs off these mean shepherds. And the girls go back to their dad and say, this guy, you know, ran us off. And the dad gives him one of his daughters as his wife. Moses is kind of practiced up on rescuing the weak and the feeble and those who can't take care of themselves. In fact, he killed an Egyptian slave driver over the fact that he was beaten up on the Israelite slave. God has already been preparing Moses. Not only that, but do you notice what Moses is actually doing when he sees the burning bush? He's out in the desert, just driving a flock from one side of the desert to the other. He's just shepherding. He's just herding the flock. If you know the story, what happens afterward, isn't it kind of similar to what Moses ends up doing, right? When God calls the people out of Egypt and out of slavery into the wilderness, Moses is pretty much their shepherd. And he's out there herding them around one side of the desert to the other. God has prepared Moses so much more than he realizes at this point. But the problem is he's focused on his own capability. And you know how God responds to his question? Moses says, who am I, Lord, that I should go and speak to the Pharaoh? Look at verse 12. Look at how God responds. In verse 12, God says, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Do you notice how God did not respond? I've read a lot of articles recently because I'm in youth ministry and that's just something that interests me. But I've read a lot of articles recently about how some articles are arguing for the fact that a kid should be encouraged based on their capability and their achievements and the things that they do well, and they should be encouraged in that. And then the other side, the people in the other camp are saying, no, you shouldn't encourage them based on that. You should just encourage them on who they are, you know, on the things that they naturally are. And there's those two sides of the camp, and both are feuding. But do you notice God didn't do either one of those? Because God doesn't really stoop to our level. Moses says, who am I? And God said, he basically tells Moses, don't worry about it, because I'm going to be with you. Who are you? Really, you're nobody. But I'm God, and I'm going with you. And he says that to Moses, I will be with you. Moses was actually really capable, but God still didn't focus on that. God didn't tell him, you know what? You're pretty good at this. You'll be okay. You're pretty good at speaking. You know the Pharaoh pretty well, and you've been herding this flock. And, you know, we try to encourage each other with that. Like, anytime Sarah and I are down, my wife Sarah and I, if one of us is down, the other one's just, you know, just dishing out as many compliments as we can dig up out of nowhere. Oh, no, you're good at this. But, you know, you're so good at your job, or you're so good at what you do. And we just kind of just try to butter them up. But, man, what a contorted view we all have of how we should be approaching the things that God calls us to. Instead of saying, oh, you're pretty good, you can make it. How about just saying, you know what, God's going to be with me. That's all I need to know, that God's going to be with me. So the first thing that gets in our way when God calls us to something is that we look at our capabilities rather than God's capabilities. The second thing is this, we look at our circumstances, right? Moses, he would have never got on board except for the fact that God came along and pretty well just coerced him to go. But Moses was more or less sitting in the background waiting for things to just pan out between Israel and Egypt, hoping that one day that things would smooth out and Moses could kind of jump back on the ship and everything would be good. Or maybe just ignore him forever. We don't know. But Moses is waiting for the circumstances to change before he joins God in what he's doing. Isn't that true of most of us? I don't know about you, but I often wait for God to move before I jump on board and follow his leading. Instead, when God's called me to do something, instead of me saying, you know what, God, I'm going to be obedient and go do that thing, I say, well, God, I need to see you moving. I need to see you working before I do that. You know, I'm gonna hang tight here, right here, until I see more evidence that you're gonna go with me. Even though God's promised me and He's never broken a promise yet, I'm still waiting. Let me give you an example of this. Okay, recently I had to start going to the doctor, the heart doctor to be exact. That's kind of scary for somebody that's 26. But luckily, it wasn't because of my heart. It was because I snore a lot. And so apparently the heart doctor also takes care of sleep apnea. And those who have been on youth camp or mission trip with me can attest to the fact that I snore like an elephant or something. I don't know. But I started having to go to the doctor. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things like you don't think that it's a big deal. And, you know, you're thinking, oh, it's... And then by the time you leave the doctor's office, you feel like you nearly died. Like you didn't realize it, but you nearly died. And then you get the bill in the mail later and you realize it was a lot more serious than you thought it was. And so anyway, I have started going to the doctor because of this whole sleep apnea thing, which apparently I just stopped breathing in the middle of the night and somehow, miraculously, God keeps me alive. But the doctor told me that because my number of apneas at night was so high that likely I was probably just a zombie all the time. And I was thinking, well, sure, I don't know. I mean, this is how I've always been. And he told me once I got on this contraption that looks like a gas mask and started using that for a while that I would begin to feel more rested. And he even said, because he noticed that I might have been a little bit overweight, he even said that you'll probably feel more like exercising once you start getting more rest. And I was thinking, okay, thanks, you know, way to be subtle. But he said, you'll probably feel, you know, you'll have more energy. A lot of my patients even start to get out and exercise. And so, you know what I did? I went home and I put on my sneakers and I was ready to go run. No, I didn't do that. What I did instead was I went home, I tried out this machine. I've been on it for like a little over a month now. I'm still waiting on God to move on the whole energy category before I get up off the couch and go run. Because that's just how I am, and probably that's how you are too with your own, you know, human nature just tells us we're going to wait to see God do something or give us a little extra, more than He's already given us, before we get up and go follow God's leading. I am so much that way. And to this day, so far, I still hadn't felt enough energy to go out and run because, I don't know, you have to have a lot of that, you know, and I don't have that. But, so Moses is focused on his circumstances. He's waiting for something to change before he follows God. Verse 12, look at what God says. He, not only does he tell Moses, I will be with you, but then he says, this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. Probably when we read that a minute ago, you just breezed right past it and didn't even notice it. And I guess in the past, when I've read this story, I did the same thing. But this time it stuck out to me that God doesn't say, and this will be the sign to the Pharaoh that I have sent you. Or this will be the sign to your people that I have sent you. He just says, this will be the sign to you that I have sent you. He's telling Moses, guess what? I'm going to give you a sign. Because all of us, we're waiting for God to move, right? We're waiting for God to move before we do something. He tells Moses, this will be the sign to you. But did you notice what the sign was? After Moses' obedience, then God's going to give him the sign. That yes, you did what I said, that what I told you to do, and you've been obedient, and so, therefore, the people are going to worship me on this mountain. So, we're all waiting for God to move and do something before we start following God. And God's saying, no, you go be obedient. In the end, you're going to see the blessing that came from it. And the blessing won't even, maybe, at least in Moses' case, won't even be about us. In Moses' case, it was that the blessing was that Moses got to experience the fact that these people who had been living in slavery for over 200 and some odd years, that they'd been living there and pretty well forgotten about God, that they have been drawn back to God. And that they are ready to worship Him again. And they'll be worshiping Him on the very mountain that He's speaking with God at this time. And so if you're waiting for a sign, if God's called you to do something and you're sitting around waiting for God to move before you move, quit waiting. Get up off your duff and go follow God and be obedient, and then watch and see how He blesses you at the end. Because He already promised you He's going to be with you. And He already gave you everything that you need. You're pretty capable already. And even if you're not, God is capable. And so go do what God called you to do. And in the end, I guarantee you're going to see that God is leading you to the thing that He's called you to do. Y'all just ignore it. That's my mother-in-law's phone. That's what she gets. She said she was going to be making dirty faces at me the whole time. So the second thing is circumstances, right? You know what's interesting about our circumstances? In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, Paul tells the Corinthians there, he says that we as believers, we walk by faith and not by sight. It's one of my favorite verses. Maybe your version says that you live by faith and not by sight. But we walk by faith, or we live by faith and not by sight. The Israelites, they were supposed to be doing that. They were supposed to be living by faith and not by sight. These people in Egypt and Pharaoh and all his people, they weren't doing that. God was going to give them some big time signs. In fact, he does, and you probably remember them. You know, there's the whole throw the stick on the ground, turns into a snake, and then God sends the plagues and all this craziness. Because those people needed a sign from God. They needed to see something big and miraculous. But God's called his people to be faithful before that. I'm not saying that's always the case. There are exceptions. If you know the story of Gideon in the Bible, he tests Gideon. Gideon tests God with this whole fleece thing. But the point I'm making is, it seems to me that God has called his people to walk by faith and not by sight. Not to wait until you see God's moving, but to know, to have faith that he's going to move. Hebrews 11:1 tells us that faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. I can assure you that you can be certain that God will be with you wherever you go. He will never leave you or forsake you. And so because of that, be assured that you've been called to live by faith and to go out and do the things that God's called you to do. So don't let your circumstances get in the way. The last thing is this, clarity. Moses asked God for more clarity. Look at verse 13. Moses said to God, okay, God, suppose I do go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? The thing I find here, or I glean from what Moses' interaction with God is, it's okay for us to question God and ask for more clarity. It's okay for us to ask him to lay it out more clearly for us. He may not always give us more clarity. He does in Moses' case, but he may not always do that. God didn't get upset with Moses for asking about clarity. In fact, he revealed to Moses more about himself than he had revealed to any of the previous generations before that. Because Moses asked for more clarity. God didn't get mad with Moses until later in chapter 4, verse 13. And Moses has gotten plenty of clarity at this point, and it's so clear that he's afraid. And he says in verse 13 of chapter 4, he says this. Moses said, oh Lord, please send someone else to do it. Please, anybody else, Lord, please send someone else to do it. I don't want to do it. It's okay for us to question God. The only time God is upset with that, at least in my observation, the only time God is upset with that is when we begin to let this lack of clarity, or supposed lack of clarity, paralyze us from doing what God's called us to do. Because if you're looking for clarity, God's already given you clarity, and he continues to give you more clarity if you study his word. In verse 17, God goes on to show Moses, and he tells him to go and remind the Israelites of this promise, that I'm going to lead them to the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. I'm going to take you there. Remind them of this. God started telling Abraham this hundreds of years ago, and the people have pretty well forgotten. But God is telling them, he says to them, go and remind these people that I'm a God of my word, and I'm going to keep my promises. And so Moses is looking for more clarity, and you notice what God says here? When I was a kid, this is one of the most confusing parts of the Bible to me. But look at what God says when he asks him, who should I say sent me? Verse 14, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is who you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, has sent me to you. God responds with, I am who I am. Does he need clarity? Absolutely. God gives him the most clear, yet the most broad statement that he could have given him. He says, I am who I am. God is eternal. He is realistic. He is God. He is all those things. He's unchanging. All that is encompassed in I am who I am. The Hebrew word for that, that translates, when they used to write it, they would write Yahweh. And they wouldn't even put vowels because they didn't have vowels in their language. It was just YHWH. And that was God's proper name. And in our English Bible, it's translated to Lord. And unfortunately for us, Lord is not a it's not a proper name, right? It's not, you know, my name is Eli, his name is Donnie. It's not like that. It's just Lord, as in, you know, youth pastor or president or whatever. That's kind of how we see the word Lord. And unfortunately, we've kind of lost the importance of what God says here. Yahweh, that's God's proper name. I am who I am. He's letting Moses know, if you want clarity, let me give you some clarity. I'm not the God that all these people have been worshiping this whole time, or they think they're worshiping, or the ones in Egypt, or the ones of the Canaanites in this land that you're going to. I'm not that guy. I'm not just God. I am Yahweh. He is the one true God. He is who he is. I am who I am is what he reminds him. If you will, turn with me one more place and then we're done. John chapter 8. I want to tie all this together for us. John chapter 8. If you feel like God is calling you to do something, and hopefully you do. Hopefully you've heard that calling. Because God's placed a call on each of our lives. A broad one to go and make disciples, but more specifically, he's been calling you to something. Whatever that is, if you feel like God's called you to do something, and you're lacking trust, you're lacking any trust in God because you're dealing with the clarity of the situation, or you're dealing with the circumstances of the situation, or you don't feel like you're capable, any of those things are getting in your way, this is what you need to hear this morning. John chapter 8, verse 56. Here's what he says. This is Jesus' words. If you have a red letter Bible, you can tell. Jesus is speaking to these people who are claiming that he's just crazy and demon-possessed. And Jesus is defending himself. In verse 56, he says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. And they say to him, 'You are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham?' 'I tell you the truth,' Jesus answered, 'before Abraham was born, I am.'" That's big words for Jesus to put on his lips. Jesus has dropped the bomb on them. Hey, I'm God. Those guys knew the Old Testament scriptures. They had read the same story about Moses, where God reveals to Moses that he is, that he says, "I am." And Jesus says, "That's me. I'm God. I am." He gives him clarity beyond any shadow of a doubt. And those people, you know what they do? They're ready to stone Jesus. They pick up stones ready to stone him. And Jesus is like, "Oh, not my time yet." Slips out the back door. And the story goes on, and you know how it ends. But Jesus is God indeed. And if you are struggling to follow God's leading in your life, if you need clarity, if you feel like you need your circumstances to change, or you're not capable, know that if you have a relationship with Jesus, that is all you need. That God's called you to do something. You've heard the old southern phrase, if he's called you to it, he'll see you through it, that sort of thing. That's absolutely true. It's not in the Bible, but it is absolutely true that God has called you to it. He's going to see you through it. Because he is with you wherever you go. He'll never leave you or forsake you. If you're struggling with trust, I'm begging you this morning, put your trust in God. Don't trust in your capabilities, because as qualified as you may be, you're still not capable to do what God's called you to do. Because God calls you to big things. He even tells Moses that Pharaoh's going to harden his heart. He's not going to believe you unless the mighty hand of God stretches out and shows him great wonders. That's what he tells Moses in that passage. God, if God's called you to do something, he's called you to something big, and you're going to need his help. So trust in him and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him. Let me pray for you this morning, and I pray that you put your trust in Jesus.